Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We are broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land in which our food is now grown. Today I am joined by Kirsty Bishop-Fox, who's just getting herself mic'd up. Kirsty's from Sustainable Pathways, and people who are regular listeners will know all about Kirsty. And Fiona, who I think is Meehan.
Meehan, you got it right.
Yeah, I got it right. That's amazing because it's one of those words that's got all the G's and the H's in it.
Yeah, it sure does.
So Fiona Meehan from, among other things, a social enterprise called Street. So we're going to start with that. So Street, S-T-R-E-A-T, so it's got the word eat in there, provides job training and support for young people in 11 cafes around the city and I think a few other hospitality enterprises.
Yeah, we have a bakery, a roastery and a catering arm as well, and we train young people in horticulture too.
Brilliant. Okay. So we'll probably get onto those things, but Kirsty and Fiona are primarily here today to talk about Siptember, which is not September, but Siptember, S-I-P, as in drink, delicately. Siptember is a campaign launched by Street, am I right about that?
Correct, yes.
To reduce waste, starting with single-use coffee cups, but I think they've moved on from that, and we'll talk about that a bit too. So, and just to give you an insight into the scale of the coffee cup problem, it's 1.87 billion single-use coffee cups that end up in landfill each year in Australia. Beyond coffee cups, packaging waste in Australia hits 1.9 million tonnes annually. So welcome to you both.
Hello.
we've already heard from you, Fiona. Fiona, would you start us off, please, with just telling us a little bit more of those figures, just to give people a perspective on the scope of the problem and why this is an important initiative.
Yeah, well, of those 1.87 billion coffee cups that are single-use coffee cups that are used every year by Australians, only about 5% actually get recycled. So that means we've got about 1.6 billion coffee cups that go into landfill every year. And that's the equivalent of filling about 100 Olympic-sized swimming pools.
Per year, 1.6 billion coffee cups.
When you say recycle, though, what does recycled mean? Because to me, I think recycle, it becomes a coffee cup again. Does that happen?
No. In fact, I actually should correct that slightly because it's really about only about 5% get used for something else. So they might go into making roads or other materials, things like that. So they don't go back as a direct, certainly not a circular thing. When we talk about recycled, it's repurposed is probably the better word.
Mm. And it's only 5%. Mm. And it's, I think it's 9% globally or something. So 5% is a little start, but it's not, you know, much.
No.
Yeah, all right. So I think I just raised that because it's really important because while it's great that it's not going to landfill and it's being used for something else, they still need new materials to do it every single time. And not everyone realises this, but the coffee cup they're drinking has a plastic lining in that. So there's a petroleum source right there. And the compostable ones, well, that's a whole new can of worms. And the worm pun was not meant to do with compostable, but it's just different because it's still that single use and new resources being needed every single time.
Yeah. And even those ones that are compostable, a lot of them need to be composted in commercial equipment. Mm. So it's there's heaps of barriers for them actually to be actually turned into compost as well.
Mm. So they're not just laid gently down in somebody's soil. It's a huge big industrial operation, isn't it, to get all that happening, all the transportation of the materials.
Yeah.
And there's carbon miles there too, because you don't have big compostable systems in the middle of the city next to people's houses. They're out in the rural areas.
Yeah, exactly. And the there are some that are home compostable, but even of those, only a very small number actually go into a compost.
We've got to keep in mind that not everyone has a home compost. There's a lot of FOGO systems which are great at collecting it, but they don't take the coffee cups either, do they?
Also, when you're having coffee cups, it's out in the street, right? You've got it because you're trying to get some kind of convenient way. You're just having a quick coffee, so it ends up in a bin in the city.
And another thing that is really, really frustrating is because those coffee cups can't be put into normal recycling or mingled recycling bins, they contaminate those bins when they get put in there. And if you go, I just challenge anybody who's listening today to go around and have a look on the side of the street, and if you see two bins, one's the recycling bin and one's the landfill bin, have a look at how many coffee cups are in both of them.
Yeah.
And they get mixed in. It's about 50-50 a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And so that contaminates all of the commingled recycling as well.
Yeah, and basically if there is a plant that's going to decontaminate it, it's going to be done by humans on an assembly line, having to go through that and pick out all the contaminated
bits. But just also too, if anyone's listening, I appreciate it is confusing because we know we can recycle cardboard. And these coffee cups look like they're cardboard, but just because of that plastic lining, that's where it gets problematic. And if you're thinking about that plastic lining, I want you to think if you had think about cardboard. You put water on cardboard, it's going to soak completely in it. So they have to have that plastic lining to hold it. But, you know, it's really interesting. I'm not sure if I've told you this story before or not, but it's always a good one to repeat. We're just off the end of Plastic Free July, and it wouldn't matter if it was January, really. But I had a friend, you know, quite a few years back doing Plastic Free July, and her one thing, she said, I'm going to do coffee cups, right? And she goes, I'm going to bring my cup with me. And like day three, she goes, Kirst.
Forgot the cup.
I forgot my cup.
I know.
Right? And she's I'll be really upfront. I'm not a coffee drinker in the way these addicted coffee drinkers are, but I knew that she was, right? So I'm like, okay, radio, all right, you're day three, that's okay, we live and we learn. She goes, no. She goes, I sat in and I had it in the mug, right? And the word she used was, it was gratifying. And she said, every time I forget, and I know I'll forget, that's what I'm going to
do. Go to a cafe and have time off by yourself.
Yeah.
Can I just flip straight onto another topic? And I hope I'm not putting you on the spot, Fiona. You've got a background in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And we just talked there about the difficulties of changing habits. Have you got any insights on that at all in relation to this topic?
Absolutely.
Please share them.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, for behaviours, for people to be able to do things or to want to do things, for a behaviour to happen, you need people to be motivated and they have to want to do something. So your friend clearly wanted to do something.
Mm.
And then you've also got to have the ability to do it.
That's the big one, isn't it?
And that's the big one. And so the motivation, ability and the opportunity to do it. So it sounds like a bit of a CSI episode when I say it like that.
Say them again.
The capability, the opportunity, and the motivation.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a combination of those three things that actually determines whether or not a behaviour happens.
Yeah.
So, yes, a lot can rely on an individual to remember their reusable cup or make sure they've got enough time to dine in, but it's also really important for us to be thinking about a few other things, and one of them is making it easy for people to do it. So in the case that Kirsty just mentioned, cafes would do well if they have a small area up the front, potentially, where people can just stand and have a quick Italian-style espresso.
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
So they don't want to come in and sit down because they think they'll lose their momentum for the day or something.
Yeah. And then other things are, you know, what about a cup loan scheme? So you can do things as simple as having a mug library. And there are some issues sometimes with that because they don't necessarily come back. But there are other commercial reusable schemes that are around as well. So that's another way of helping people who get to the point of, I want to buy my coffee and, oh, damn, I left my cup at home. Here's another alternative for you as well. And then Another thing that's really important is people take cues in the environment that's around them too, and we call it social norms.
Yep.
And it's, so it's this idea that if you see that something is the normal,
yep,
you see signals in the environment, you see other people doing something, you're way more likely to do it yourself, and your motivation goes up a little bit.
Yeah.
So you're more likely to actually do it. So that's a really important thing. And we're actually working as part of our September campaign to create what we're calling a wall of champions. And so we have photos of stall holders at the market that are taking part. We've got food truck vendors that are also taking part in our, we're working with a company called Be Alternative. And they are providing and washing dishes at the market at the moment in a 3-month trial. And so we have, we have photos of those stall holders. We also have photos of our cafe staff being gladly accepting and welcoming. It's not just tolerating, mm-hmm, it's about welcoming. The language is super important.
And people need to feel not embarrassed about being at the front of the new behaviour.
Yeah, that's right. They need to not be afraid of that. And we also don't want to make people feel bad or feel judged, because there are who knows what barriers.
If they're not doing the new behaviour.
Yeah, exactly. But the wall is the idea to celebrate what's going well. Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff that's invisible as well. People don't know that other people are doing stuff.
Yep.
And when you talk about the psychology of it, there's actually really interesting research that shows that the biggest predictor of people doing sustainable behaviours is if they think other people are doing it.
Mm.
But most people think that people care less than they do. So,
oh, do they?
Yeah. So if we can surface all of these people that are actually already doing the things, it actually helps you feel that you're not alone.
Surface them. So bring them out and let everyone see them.
Yeah.
And the other thing too, I think there's another element as well, because there's getting those people on board, but then there's those people who wish others were on board, you know, and they're trying to get their friends and their family on board, and they can get a little bit despondent. It's kind of like, well, I'm the only one with my keep cup. So when they see other people, even a complete stranger with a keep cup, or not just a keep cup, but that's what we're talking about today. I know that particularly with the younger ones, not just the younger ones, but it's like, oh, thank goodness. You know, I've heard the younger ones saying, we've got to, you know, everyone before us, we've got to sort them out.
Mm.
So when they actually see that it's happening, it actually gives them a real positive reinforcement that they're not alone.
Mm.
There are many people. I think most people want to do what the right thing, but they need to know what that right thing is, and that right thing needs to be accessible.
And that needs to be easy. I think that's a really big one.
Yeah,
it's got to be easy for
them.
That's
right. So I think there's a few different elements going on with the benefits.
Now, I want to ask you a question too. We talked before, you talked about the idea of, I understand why a vendor, it's easier for them just to have a paper cup, right? Then they've got no washing up, no, they don't have to purchase the other ones.
Yes.
How can you comment on that? How are vendors managing those problems?
Well, interesting. I'll give you an example. I don't know if you've heard this, but Bermagui has become the first city in or town in Victoria to go single-use cup free. And they actually worked with a company called Good Reusables, who have actually put out, they have worked with, I think it's seven, I might get the figures wrong, I think it was about seven cafes, and I think, Kirsty, you know about it quite well as well. And what they found, they created an impact report, and they actually found that one of the things that worked well for the vendors, it took them a while to get on board with it, but actually it saved them money in the end, because each of those disposable cups cost, let's say, around 11 cents.
Right.
And the cost of washing the reusable cups is less than the cost.
So if you just show them that, that takes a big incentive away from them. That's fantastic.
And can I add, what's interesting about Bermagui, which, sorry, Fiona, slight corrections, New South Wales town.
Oh.
it's a coastal town, and they have a lot of holiday and tourists. So they actually introduced this at the start of December when they were moving into their peak tourist time.
Wow.
I think the timing didn't quite align. They would have liked it to be different, but it was delayed, and that's what happened. But even the tourists who were there was a really positive uptake. I think it was it $2 or $3, a few dollars for that cup. They got the money back when that cup was returned. And one of the stories, I'm going to tell this, it's such a beautiful story. Tenzin, who was we were on a discussion with earlier in the year in the Great Coffee Cup debate, he actually said he had like a pay it forward jar, and he put $60 worth in that pay it forward jar for those who didn't have the cash or wanted to complain or whatever.
Oh, for the $3 deposit.
Right. But what was really warming my heart was he said that customers would come in, they would see that jar and they would add to it, right? So that jar was never in deficit. So that just showed the real support of the coffee cup system there, because that's not something that he expected.
That's a great combination of great stories there. That's very – I love the idea when a whole town does it. That really gives it momentum.
That was a part of the success, because I remember Tenzin laughing. I really laughed with him. He said sometimes there was the odd person that would come in and they'd go, no, this is too hard, and they would go next door. And he's cracking himself laughing because next door they were told the same story.
So there you go. Take the opportunity away to have the plastic cup or plastic lined cup, and it's, you haven't got a problem.
Yeah. You know, and their biggest motivator into switching to this is they were using the compostable cups. They started with the compostable cups believing it was a great environmental system. When they learnt those compostable cups weren't being composted and they were paying more for the privilege of using those compostable cups, they realised that that wasn't the sustainable solution that they were looking for, and that's what pushed them into doing this. So they're saving money, and of course it's a reusable system now.
Thank you. So you're listening to 3CR Local Food Connections, and we'll be back shortly.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
We're talking about ecological thinning and subsidised logging, but we basically mean the same things, don't we, here?
Wherever there are chemical corporations around the world, they're constantly trying to chip away at regulations.
Earth Matters, bringing you environmental and social justice stories, from developments in government and industry to the campaigns and communities that are standing up to them. Earth Matters plays at 11 a.m. Sunday and 6:30 a.m. Wednesday. Turn your dial to 855 a.m. or listen online at 3cr.org.au.
While the headlines have subsided, the nuclear power plant is still not under control, with the spent fuel rods removed from only one out of four reactors.
Law needs to change so that our rights can be recognised, so that decisions in relation to the use and exploitation of our lands is out.
This is the Local Food Connection show on 3CR, 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial, and 3CR on digital radio. You can visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show, and you can visit the 3CR Local Food Connections website to find over 100 podcasts now, I think, of fantastic guests that we've had on the show over the last couple of years. Fantastic guests today are Fiona Meehan. I got it right again. Fiona Meehan and Kirsty Bishop-Fox. And just to go into our last section, the second section of our show, we'll launch straight into Kirsty. If you can just explain to us what's happening in September. Oh, not Kirsty, I meant Fiona, sorry. Looking at Fiona, I'm saying Kirsty.
So in September, which we do each year in September, it's a campaign, as we were talking about before the break, on reducing single-use coffee cups and containers and dishes. So what we do is we do a range of things. Raising awareness is the number one thing, of course. We have created an open source kit. So we invite anybody who would like to take part in our campaign to download our kit. You can be an individual, you could have a work group of people, you could be a hospitality organisation, a corporate, and we've even got some councils getting on board this year, which is fantastic. We create socials, we have a bunch of tips and tricks. Our kit includes posters for organisations to put up in their cafes or their workplaces, and we encourage people to actually create a goal for themselves or their group. So it's not about being perfect, it's about how can you improve the number of the times that you use a reusable cup?
So just improve it, container. Just make progress with it. Don't have to be perfect.
You don't have to be perfect. Nobody is. And I mean, obviously, if people are able to get 100% reusables, that's super exciting. But we have a bunch of gamifications, if you like, where we sort of have friendly competitions across our cafes, but we invite others to join in with that as well. And we have a little tiny habits challenge too, if people want to sign up for that. So if you're somebody who forgets your reusable cup on a regular basis and you want to have a go at trying a little technique to create a new habit, to remember to take your cup, that would be something that you might be interested in. We're doing all of those sorts of things. We encourage people to take their containers to the market or wherever they buy their produce. Take your coffee cup or your hot beverage cup. Not everybody drinks coffee. And also, if you can, dine in and actively ask for a dine-in cup or plate.
Yeah.
Because it's really super easy for people to just by default be served on takeaway containers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have to say, I've been in that situation a few times where I've ordered a coffee, I've been dining in.
And it just comes and it's so annoying. Yeah.
Yeah. But we'd love people to join in and we can provide all the materials and we'd love to just, the more we get together, you know, the more we can create a movement.
Yep. Any comments on that, Kirsty?
I think it's really a great idea. You know, in the sense of it's like people, it's getting those habits in place and then continuing them on. And often it's easy to fall out of habit and it's just getting back in. And it's just one small thing that when done every day does make it a big difference.
This is what I'm impressed about with this. It's that this tiny habits, gamification, understanding the importance of motivation, capability and opportunity. So the fact that it's infused with the psychological knowledge is what's giving this particular initiative some strength. Other people I have on that might be running a social enterprise or a community garden or something, often it's their governance that's really impressive because you're going to have to take some, it's going to usually have to be something more than just doing something in a little group. You're going to have some kind of governance in your organization or some kind of games or some kind of little fun things to do to give it traction.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about Street and what it does and how that connects also with the sustainability?
Yeah. Yeah. So Street is a social enterprise that helps young people who are facing barriers to barriers and disadvantage and helps them with employment opportunities across our cafes. And we talked before about the bakery and catering arm as well in the roastery. So young people do that. But we know as an organisation that works in the hospitality space, we actually are very resource intensive as well. And we know that you can't have healthy young people if you don't have a healthy planet. So our two founders, Beck Scott and Kate Burrell, that was part of their ethos from the very, very beginning. People know Street very much for the work we do with young people. They don't know so much about the stuff that we do for the planet. And that actually, we did a really big project at the end of 2017, we created a planet plan and we worked with some Melbourne Uni master's students who came in and we went through the rubbish bins and looked at all of our invoices, what was coming in, what was coming out. And we created a 50-year plan, which, to be honest, I thought, oh, that's quite a long time frame. But we had a lot of things to do in the short term. And having a vision for 50 years actually was really helpful because even if we don't achieve the exact things on there, it gives everybody a North Star to work towards.
Yeah.
But what we found out too is that those things that we did in the early days, we actually did way more than we thought we would. And so it just shows, you know, sometimes you think you're being audacious with what you're wanting to do, then you realise you could be doing more. So that's a really big part of
it. It's good to be a bit audacious, I think, and then you realise, oh, hang on, that was nothing really.
Yeah, yeah. And over the years, you know, Street's works in the food system as well. And we've had a couple of projects, one called Open Source, spelt SAUCE, and Crowdsource, also spelt SAUCE, which is all about how might we actually use items within the food system at their highest value. So
explain that.
Yeah, so it would be very easy to say, okay, we're putting these organic materials into compost. Yay, we've done a good job. But actually, we could potentially be doing a lot more with those items.
But you mean food scraps?
Well, it could be materials as well. It could be, you know, we've got cardboard or that could be given another life, mm-hmm. used for something else. Mm-hmm. It could be plastic lids that you could make into, we're doing it at the moment at the market, actually making plastic lids, in shredding them up and making them into pens and things like that. So, you know, you could use those materials and treat them as a resource rather mm-hmm. than a waste product mm-hmm. that then goes into compost. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. And then with the food as well, if you think about, there's so many, what we've done at the market with that crowdsource project is we actually did an audit of the oversupply of fruit and veg that was there that wasn't getting sold that would have otherwise gone into compost. And we discovered between 96 and 97% of those items could be turned into something edible.
Wow. Like a pie.
Or it could be...
Or a sauce.
Yeah. Oh, a sauce, yeah.
Well, we have lots of hot sauces. Yeah, I think, Kirstie, you might have tried
one. I've definitely sampled them. Highly recommend.
So they could be made into those sorts of things, items to be sold in the cafe, retail products, pickles, jams, chutneys.
So have you got arrangements then with the stall holders, the fruit and vegetable stall holders, to get your hands on that stuff?
Yeah, so our eco-chefs have been big on working on establishing very good relationships with various stall holders to be able to do that. And it's a bit of an experiment too, because we've only got a kitchen of a certain size, so there's only so much you can do in that kitchen. So we're also looking at strategies. How do you actually think about other ways of diverting the materials there as well? But it's really cool to see that you can, you know, use things at a much higher value than you might think if you just...
Especially if everyone's got their mind on that, yes, and not just on profit or what livelihood or whatever.
Exactly. But then when those retail products can then be used to actually, help fund for-purpose projects or support training young people, that's another form of circularity as well, I guess.
We might come back to circularity and also the precinct, what did we call it?
Purpose precinct?
Purpose precinct near the Victoria Market. But would you, Kirstie, please just spruik again what's happening with Zero Waste Festival? What can people expect?
Yeah, Zero Waste Festival on Saturday, 6th of September. So that's just under 4 weeks away now. But who's counting? We've got a great program lined up. We've got a beautiful food discussion panel. We'll have Simon Tui, Mandy Hall, Farmers Pick, a few more surprises, which I can't yet announce, but stay tuned. And then there'll be discussions all day, the repair cafes. We'll have Green My Plate there, who'll be washing all the reusable packaging, so we won't have that there, but great day there. Look up Zero Waste Festival. If you Google that, you'll find it, or if not, find Zero Waste Victoria. Look us up on the socials and we'll be updating as we go.
Thank you. Fiona, I think we spoke before the interview about stepping up. It's not just, it was September and it was focused on coffee cups, but you said you were focusing a bit wider this year?
Yeah, containers. We really encourage people to bring their containers when they go to the market. It's really interesting to know, if you go to the Vic market, for example, you can buy your butter, cheese, meat, fish, all of those sorts of things in containers. So, there are very few barriers to actually using.
So if you just bring the thing and say to the vendor, can you please put it in this box?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been doing that for, Queen Vic Market isn't my local area, but whenever I head there, then I do take my containers there. And just they'll weigh the container and then they'll fill it and then it's fine. Do all vendors take it now?
It comes in patches, but there's so many vendors that do it. Yeah. We're actually compiling a list at the moment. So
put all their faces up.
Yeah, we do. We have a little wall where we've got faces of different people who do.
Yeah.
And I actually discovered last week that there's a coffee vendor there too who sells, the person who runs it told me she sells about 1,000 bags of coffee a month in reusable bags. So I was pretty excited to
hear
that.
That people bring or that she reuses herself?
Well, people bring them. I think they buy them from her to begin with, and then they keep bringing them back.
Wow, fantastic.
So these are those little invisible things people don't know
and
about.
And there's Rewind there too as well. So
you get your olive oil, your wine, and lots of deli items.
You buy the bottle and take it back each time, which is a great idea.
And you could probably even just bring an old a wine bottle or something, and they can weigh it, as you say, and do that maybe.
Or I'm not sure.
Top
I think
it up.
You may have to have one of their bottles. Don't hold me to it. But I know that I say that because you know that's not my local area. But we did a tour there a few years ago, a sustainability tour, and they were telling it was absolutely amazing what they do. But yeah, just to refill your wine, well, makes it okay, doesn't it?
Yeah, doesn't count if it's in a reusable.
All right, I think that is all we've got time for. Maybe one more comment, Fiona. If there's one thing you'd like to say.
Well, could I tell people how they could sign up to September?
That would be good.
Yeah. So if you go to the STREAT website, it's street.com.au and then /September, not September, September. That will take you to our landing page and you can sign up for the kit there. And we'd love to see you on board.
Fantastic. And you'll send out a kit, so that's great.
Yes.
You could do it at your staff room at school or your lunchroom, whatever.
Absolutely.
Any final comments, Kirsty?
Zero Waste Festival, Google it, September 6th. See you there.
It's going to be great.
Thank you. That is all we've got time for. Pleasure chatting with you both. Feel quite inspired. My name's Anne Stanley. My guests were Kirsty Bishop-Fox and Fiona Meehan. Till next week, love the land you're on, share your surplus, and take care of each other. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more Radical Radio with Latin American Update. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.